Good afternoon and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun South of Arizona. Thanks for joining us, and I hope all of you are having a terrific holiday season. Here's an article that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic, How to Identify Your Holiday Cactus by Mike Hogan. Did your Christmas cactus bloom in November this year? If so, you likely are the proud plant parent of a Thanksgiving cactus. A Thanksgiving cactus normally blooms between Halloween and Thanksgiving and is a different plant than the traditional Christmas cactus. Indeed, many plants sold as Christmas cactuses at this time of the year are not Christmas cactuses at all. And many of the plants that I like to call holiday cacti are passed down from one generation to the next as family heirlooms because they are plants that live a long time, sometimes up to 100 years. So, it's not uncommon for someone to own a holiday cactus with an unknown pedigree. Identifying a holiday cactus. All three holiday cactuses are easy-to-grow houseplants that are native to the rainforest of Brazil, not to the desert, which we typically associate with most species of cactuses. These plants are actually succulents, not true cactuses. The Thanksgiving cactus blooms from late October through November, while the Christmas cactus blooms from late November through late January. The Easter cactus blooms only in the spring. Complicating this understanding of the holiday cactus bloom schedule is the fact that sometimes Thanksgiving and Christmas cactuses bloom a second time in the spring. The best method to identify which holiday cactus you own is to examine the shape of its leaves, which are not true leaves, but modified stems called phylloclades and cladophylls. These flattened pad-like stems are segmented, almost like the links of a chain. Each of the three holiday cactuses has differently shaped stems. Thanksgiving cactus stem segments have 2 to 4 sharp points on each side, giving the stem a jagged edge. The stem segments on a Christmas cactus have more rounded teardrop indentations. Easter cactus stem segments are more oval in shape, with rounded indentations. Blossoms on each type of holiday cactus are also different. Thanksgiving cactus flowers are asymmetrical and hang down from stems that arch downward, although the flowers present more horizontally. The flowers on a Christmas cactus are more symmetrical in shape and present more vertically. Easter cactus flowers are flatter, star-shaped, and tend to point upward. Holiday cactus flowers can be red, pink, peach, yellow, purple, fuchsia, salmon, orange, or white. The flowers typically last for a few weeks. Easter cactuses typically have more vibrant colors than Christmas or Thanksgiving cactuses. Miniature varieties of Christmas cactuses also exist. Caring for a holiday cactus. All of these holiday cactuses prefer rich, porous, acid soil as they are epiphytes, which means that in their native habitat, they grow on other plants, typically in the areas where branches meet in other indentations of branches or the trunk of a tree. In their native habitat, these plants obtain moisture from air and rain and nutrients from decaying leaves and plant debris. As houseplants, their soil should be kept evenly moist and allowed to dry out between watering. Holiday cactuses should be kept in a bright location but out of direct sunlight. Holiday cactuses will benefit from frequent misting of the foliage, especially in winter when interior spaces typically have lower humidity. Similar to poinsettias, holiday cactuses are short-day plants, which means that they require cool overnight temperatures between 60 and 65 degrees Fahrenheit and 12 hours of complete darkness each day for several weeks before they will bloom. The plants can be pruned after they bloom to make them fuller. Holiday cactuses seem to do best when they are somewhat root-bound, so don't be too quick to repot holiday cactuses into larger pots. No matter which holiday cactus you own, these plants provide a pop of color inside the home at a time of the year when few other plants are in bloom. So enjoy the color, whether it arrives around Christmas, Thanksgiving, or Easter. Here's another column that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic, Tips for Decorating with Greenery by Connie Smith. One of the oldest winter holiday traditions is decorating the home with fresh greenery. Evergreens are used to represent everlasting life and hope for the return of spring. Today, decorating for the holidays with fresh greenery is more prevalent than ever. Greenery such as cedar, ivy, pine, and holly adds a fresh look and natural scent to homes. The first and often the best place to look for holiday greenery may be in a personal garden or landscape. Greenery gathered from a garden will be far fresher than any that can be purchased. A wider variety of unusual greenery may be available that would be difficult to find for purchase. Remember that the plants are being pruned when gathering live greenery from the garden shrubs and trees. Consider carefully which branches to cut and which ones to leave. Distribute the cuts evenly around the plant in order to preserve its natural form. Many different kinds of greenery can be used for holiday decorations. Pines, firs, and cedars are good to use for indoor decoration since they dry out slowly and hold their needles best at warm interior temperatures. They may last for several weeks if properly treated and cared for. Hemlock, spruces, and most broadleaf evergreens will last longer if used outdoors. Greenery for holiday decorations. Here are some suggested varieties to use in holiday decorating. Boxwood. This small leaf shrub is a longtime favorite for fine textured wreaths and garlands. It has an aroma that is either loved or hated. Be sure of the family's reaction before using it indoors. Firs. All firs have a wonderful scent and good tolerance of hot, dry indoor conditions. The needles are short and flat with excellent color and needle retention. Fraser fir, wreaths, and swags are commonly available from commercial sources. Holly. This most traditional holiday green comes in several forms, both green and variegated. Female plants display bright red berries. Make sure that holly does not freeze after cutting, or the leaves and berries may blacken. Junipers. Fragrant, short, green, or silver-blue foliage may be adorned with small blue berries. The needles are often sticky. Eastern red cedar is a native juniper and is readily available. Pine. There are many different types of pine to use in garlands and wreaths. Most are long-lasting with excellent needle retention. Spruce. Wreaths are the main use for spruce greens. The branches are stiff with short, sharp needles. Blue spruce is especially attractive because of its color, and it holds its needles better than other spruce. Needle retention is poorer on spruce than on other conifer greens. Keeping greenery fresh. To keep greenery fresh, use clean, sharp cutters to cut branches and immediately put cut ends into water until ready to use. Crush the ends of woody stems to allow the cutting to take in more water. Keep greenery out of sunlight. Immerse greenery in water overnight before arranging, allowing the cuttings to absorb the maximum amount of moisture. Allow the foliage to dry and spray it with an anti-transpirant such as Wiltproof to help seal in moisture. Dried evergreens can become flammable when in close contact with a heat source such as a candle flame or fireplace. Make sure that any wreaths, roping, and garlands brought indoors are as fresh as possible. Check needles by bending them. They should be flexible and not break. Avoid using greenery that is shedding needles or that has brown, dry tips. Never place fresh greenery near heat sources such as space heaters, heater vents, or sunny windows. Be careful of wreaths used on the front door if a glass outer door receives direct sunlight, as the reflective heat will burn the foliage. If decorative lights are used near green arrangements, make sure that they stay cool. If using holiday lights outside, confirm that they are rated for exterior use. Check all decorations every couple of days for freshness. If the greenery is becoming dry, either replace or remove the dry portions. Discard dry greenery away from the house or garage to prevent further fire hazards. Some popular plants used in holiday decorating can present poisoning hazards for small children or pets. Poisonous berries are found in hollies, yews, mistletoe, and Jerusalem cherry. The pearly white berries of mistletoe are particularly toxic. Keep all these plants out of the reach of children and curious pets. Holiday cacti are fun to grow. Holiday cacti are indeed true cacti, but they are not as drought-tolerant as their desert-dwelling relatives. Their potting mix should be kept moderately moist. During periods of active growth, plants should be watered whenever the soil begins to feel dry to the touch. Holiday cacti require excellent drainage, and plants should not be allowed to sit in saucers filled with water. Plants can be fertilized once a month from April to October with a water-soluble, balanced fertilizer such as 20-20-20 or the equivalent. Holiday cacti do not require frequent repotting. Usually once every 3 years is sufficient. Check the drainage holes for excessive root growth and repot in spring if necessary. After holiday cacti finish flowering, cut back on water slightly until new growth appears. Then resume a regular watering and fertilizing regime. Plants can be pruned in late spring to encourage branching. Removed pieces consisting of several segments can be rooted in moist vermiculite or perlite to make more plants. How to make more plants? Remove 2 to 5 segment sections and leave them out overnight to dry. Callus tissue will form on the cut or pinched end. Place the cut end about 1 inch deep in the moistened vermiculite or perlite. Place the starts in a bright area, but not in direct sunlight. Check the cuttings after a few weeks for roots by gently tugging on them. Most holiday cacti will appreciate being set outside in a shady place during the summer months. When the temperatures drop below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, it is time to bring them back inside and discontinue fertilizing. Plants can be placed in an area with 60 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit days and 55 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit at night. After 4 to 8 weeks, flower buds will appear. As we get ready to turn the page to 2025, from Garden Design, New Year's Resolutions for Gardeners, 12 Inspiring Ideas to Kick Off Your Gardening Year by Linda Hagen. First on the list, learn, grow, and share. Make this your year to both grow and share your garden knowledge. Explore webinars, online courses, and in-person events that spark your interest. Then, put that knowledge to work in your community. Open your garden for tours, mentor new gardeners, or share your seasonal successes on social media. Consider Master Gardener certification to formalize your learning and create new opportunities to teach others. Learning and teaching go hand in hand in creating a more vibrant gardening community. Second, master the art of pruning. Commit to learning proper pruning techniques for different ornamental plants. Understanding when and how to properly prune plants will result in healthier plants and more abundant blooms. Third, improve your soil's health. Focus on building healthy soil by adding organic matter, rotating crops, or planting cover crops in vegetable beds. Healthy soil means thriving plants. Fourth, design with four-season interest. Plan your garden to shine year-round. Include winter blooming flowers, spring bulbs, summer perennials, and autumn interest plants like ornamental grasses and trees with spectacular fall color. Create striking combinations that ensure your garden never sleeps. Visit your favorite local garden center often and plant something that stands out each month. 5. Create stunning container displays. Develop your container design skills. Plan seasonal rotations of containers to maintain visual interest throughout the year. Try new color combinations and unusual plant varieties in your pot arrangements. 6, grow a themed garden. Focus on a single theme, like a moonlight garden with white flowers and silver foliage, or a kitchen garden with all your favorite culinary herbs. Themes add a cohesive, creative flair. 7, support local wildlife. Transform your garden into a haven for wildlife by including native flowering plants, creating water features, and providing shelter through thoughtful landscaping. Design butterfly gardens, install bird-friendly features, and embrace the natural ecosystem. 8, develop or refine your garden's color palette. Plan and implement a cohesive color scheme in your garden. Whether you prefer a monochromatic white garden, a hot border of reds and oranges, or a cooling palette of blues and purples, commit to refining your garden's visual impact through careful color selection. 9, create garden rooms. Define distinct spaces within your garden through thoughtful design. Establish outdoor rooms with different themes or purposes, perhaps a secret garden, a meditation space, or a cutting garden for fresh bouquets. Use hedges, structures, or changes in elevation to create and define these spaces. 10, experiment with vertical gardening. Maximize small spaces with vertical gardens. Try trellises, hanging baskets, or living walls to add a lush, layered look to patios or balconies. Number 11, add artistic touches to your garden. Unleash your creativity by incorporating art and handmade elements into your garden design. Start with simple projects like painting terracotta pots in bold patterns, crafting mosaic stepping stones, or repurposing old items as unique garden decor. An antique bicycle, an upcycled window frame, or even colorful glass bottles can add personality and charm to your space. For larger projects, consider installing a sculpture, wind chimes, or a decorative arbor as focal points. You can also highlight your artistic flair with whimsical touches like fairy gardens, painted rocks, or do-it-yourself birdhouses. By blending art with nature, your garden becomes not just a growing space, but a personal expression of your style. And number 12, start a garden journal. Document your garden's progress throughout the seasons. Record maintenance tasks, bloom times, successful plant combinations, color schemes, and observations about weather patterns. This valuable resource will help you become a more knowledgeable gardener and create a lasting record of your garden's evolution. Take regular photos of your garden's progress throughout the year and include those in your journal. Capture morning and evening light, seasonal color changes, and perfect bloom moments. Create a digital archive that helps you track plant performance and garden development over time. A new year means a fresh start and new opportunities in life and your garden. Our best to you in the coming year. From the Farmer's Almanac, here's a short history of New Year's resolutions. From the Babylonians, who resolved to return borrowed farm equipment to medieval knights who would renew their vow to chivalry, New Year's resolutions are nothing new. In 2000 BC, the Babylonians celebrated the New Year during a 12-day festival called Akitu, starting with the vernal equinox. This started the farming season to plant crops, crown their king, and make promises to pay their debts. One common resolution was the return of borrowed farm equipment, which makes sense for an agriculturally based society. The Babylonian New Year was adopted by the ancient Romans, as was the tradition of resolutions. The timing, however, eventually shifted with the Julian calendar in 46 BC, which declared January 1st as the start of the new year. How resolutions have changed. In the United States, New Year's resolutions are still a tradition, but the types of resolutions have changed. As a legacy of our Protestant history, resolutions in the early 1900s were more religious or spiritual, reflecting a desire to develop stronger moral character, a stronger work ethic, and more restraint in the face of earthly pleasures. Over the years, however, resolutions seem to have migrated from denying physical indulgences to general self-improvement, like losing weight. While it may seem superficial, medical sociologist Natalie Borrow of San Jose State University suggests that today's resolutions are also a reflection of status, financial wealth, responsibility, and self-discipline, which isn't that different from how the New Year's resolution tradition began. And here's the difference. Here are the resolutions from 1947, according to Gallup. First on the list, improve my disposition, be more understanding, control my temper. Second, improve my character, live a better life. Third, stop smoking and smoke less. Fourth, save more money. Fifth, stop drinking or drink less. Sixth, be more religious, go to church more often. Seven, be more efficient and do a better job. Eighth, take better care of my health. Ninth, take a greater part in home life. And 10th, lose or gain weight. Now here are today's resolutions. Lose weight, 1. 2, get organized. 3, spend less, save more. 4th, enjoy life to the fullest. 5th, stay fit and healthy. 6th, learn something exciting. 7th, quit smoking. 8th, help others fulfill their dreams. 9, fall in love. And 10th, spend more time with family. Sounds like some good resolutions. And here are 10 tips for making resolutions. A resolution is often worded as not doing something, but that's not a great way to make small improvements in your life. So here are some tips. Avoid wording your resolution negatively, such as quitting or stopping a behavior. For example, say, I want my nails to grow instead of I want to stop biting my nails. Take a photo of your nails every day and log your progress. Second, set aside time on your calendar to pause and reflect. Love coffee? Sit down during coffee mornings with a journal or notebook and write out your status. If it helps, piggyback this task with another one you already do. Third, keep it simple. Settle on one or two goals, not a big list. Fourth, pick a goal you think will make you feel better, not just something you think you should do or what society is telling you to change. For example, if you do wish to lose weight for health, how about saying, I want to eat more interesting salads for lunch, and then go find all the yummy toppings you can find. Artichoke hearts, avocados, tomatoes, pickles, capers, olives, and protein. Fifth, define a goal that is specific and measurable. Saying, I want to be more helpful to others is vague, but saying, I'm going to help the needy by signing up for the church's food pantry each month is specific. Number six, when you think about what you wish to achieve, consider what obstacles could get in your way and see how to remove those barriers. If your goal is to take your pills or vitamins each day and you are forgetful, get a 7-day pill box. Number seven, define a goal that is time-bound and realistic. Plan for a month at a time, not a lifetime. For example, resolving to retire in 5 years may not be realistic, but creating a monthly budget and setting aside all your surplus toward retirement may be an achievable goal. Number nine is to change up your routine. For example, if you aren't brushing your teeth long enough, perhaps come up with another task to do while you brush your teeth, such as wiping down the bathroom mirror. Perhaps you need a tool to help you reach your goals. And number 10, if you slip up, don't worry about it. But if you slip again, reconsider your plan. Are you too ambitious? If you plan to walk 5 days a week, scale it back to 3 days and plan which days you'll walk to get into a schedule. How about walking before you eat lunch so that you can enjoy it after your walk? And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Love and Daffodils Forever. It was written by Nicole Woodward, and there's a quote here from Bess Streeter Aldrich. It is better to remember our love as it was in the springtime. Love and daffodils forever. Bill and Constance had just celebrated their 39th anniversary when Bill went for his annual checkup. Always in perfect health, he was unprepared for what the doctor found. Symptoms Bill had ignored as old age led to questions, palpations, more questions, and finally instructions for a battery of tests. Just to be on the safe side, the doctor said. When Bill took the news home to Constance, she refused to consider that it could be something serious. Fortunately, it was April and the gardens beckoned. Preparing the beds for the coming season, Bill and Constance threw themselves into the now familiar yearly routine. They spent their days, as always, surrounded by trays of flowers and bags of mulch, wielding their favorite trowels. As the summer progressed, 30 years of gardening rewarded them with a showplace of color. Benches and bird baths were placed amid the bounty of flowers, and they spent nearly every evening during the summer relaxing and basking in the beauty. The old swing hung from their favorite oak, and they held hands, swinging like teenagers and talking until long after the sun set and the fireflies flickered. By summer, Constance began to notice a subtle change in Bill. He seemed to tire more easily, had difficulty rising from his knees, and had little appetite. By the time the test results were in, she was no longer so sure of a good prognosis. When the doctor ushered them into his office, she knew. His demeanor was too professional, too unlike the friend they had known and trusted for so many years. There was no easy way to say it. Bill was dying, with so little hope of curing his illness that it would be kinder not even to try. He had perhaps 6 months left, time enough to put his house in order, but little time for anything else. They decided he would stay at home, with help from visiting nurses and hospice when the time came. Their children were both far away, one in Oregon and the other in Chicago. They came for extended visits, but with jobs and children, neither could come permanently. So Bill and Constance spent the ending time as they had spent the beginning time, alone together. Only now they had their beloved gardens, a great comfort to them both for that entire summer. By September, Bill was fading fast, and they both knew the end was near. For some reason, Constance couldn't understand. He seemed to be pushing her to get out more. He urged her to call old friends and have lunch, go shopping, see a movie. She resisted until he became so agitated that she conceded and began making her calls. Everyone was more than willing to accompany her, and she did take some comfort in talking over lunch or during the long ride to the mall. Bill passed away peacefully in October, surrounded by his family. Constance was inconsolable. Nothing could have prepared her for the emptiness she felt. Winter descended upon her with a vengeance, and suddenly it seemed dark all the time. Then the holidays came, and she went to Oregon for Thanksgiving and to Chicago for Christmas. The house was cold and empty when she returned. She wasn't quite sure how she could go on, but somehow she did. At long last, it was April again, and with April came the return to longer and warmer days. She would go from window to window, looking out at the yard, knowing what needed to be done, but not really caring if she did it or not. And then one day, she noticed something different about the gardens. They were coming to life sooner than they had in the past. She went out and walked all around and through the beds. Daffodils were peeking up through the soil, hundreds and hundreds of daffodils. She and Bill never put many spring plants in their gardens. They so enjoyed the colors of summer that they had only a few spring daffodils and hyacinths scattered here and there. Where did they come from? She wondered as she walked. Not only did the blooms completely encircle each bed, they were also scattered inside among the still dormant perennials. They appeared in groups all over the lawn and even lined the driveway to the street. They ring the trees and they lined the foundation of the house. She couldn't believe it. Where on earth had they come from? A few days later, she received a call from her attorney. He needed to see her, he said. Could she come to his office that morning? When Constance arrived, he handed her a package with instructions not to open it until she returned home. He gave no other explanation. When she opened the package, two smaller packages were inside. One was labeled, "Open Me First." Inside was a video cassette. Constance put it into the VCR, and Bill appeared on the screen talking to her from his favorite chair, dressed not in pajamas, but in a sweater and slacks. "My darling Constance," he began, "today is our anniversary, and this is my gift to you." He told her of his love for her, and then he explained the daffodils. "I know these daffodils will be blooming on our anniversary and will continue to do so forever," Bill said. "I couldn't plant them alone, though. Their many friends had conspired with Bill to get the bulbs planted. They had taken turns last fall getting Constance out of the house for hours at a time so the work could be done." The second package held the memories of all those friends who so generously gave of their time and energy so Bill could give her his final gift. Photographs of everyone came spilling out, images captured forever of them working in the garden, laughing, taking turns, snapping pictures, and visiting with her beloved husband, who sat bundled in a lawn chair watching. In the photo, Constance framed and put by her bed, Bill is smiling at her and waving his trowel. That's called Love and Daffodils Forever, written by Nicole Woodward, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of the holiday season, and we'll be talking with you soon in 2025.